This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes. Also, make sure to check out and subscribe to our YouTube original channel, UCTV Prime, available only on YouTube at youtube.com/UCTV Prime. This UCTV podcast is sponsored in part by Audible.com, your destination for the widest selection of digital audiobooks available, including many by guests you've heard here on UCTV. Audible.com is offering UCTV podcast listeners a free 30-day trial subscription and one free audiobook download. Just visit audibletrial.com/UCTV to sign up. That's audibletrial.com/UCTV. And thanks.
Just so we're all on the same page, the use of customized methods and devices to supplement a person's ability to communicate. So this could be to augment current speech or provide an alternative to speech. And AAC incorporates a variety of strategies and techniques and systems. It's not just one device. So we think of it in terms of a communication toolbox. We all use a variety of ways to communicate, and that's similar for someone who's going to need these additional helps and strategies and systems. So if we think of our toolbox, we have no-tech means of communication, such as sign language. We have light-tech, which could be something like a communication board or book, a picture board. Mid-tech might be when we're starting to need a battery and it's a little more electronic. And then high-tech devices. The more sophisticated computers and everything from the iPad and Android devices to specially made communication systems for individuals. So someone using AAC is going to probably use all of these strategies, and even if someone uses a high-tech device, it's good to have some backup systems, some picture boards, utilize whatever means that somebody has to communicate. It's a total communication. Bonnie mentioned who can benefit, and if you come to our, we do have a table in the exhibit area and have some buttons that have our this saying, not being able to speak is not the same as not having anything to say. Very important. So what is it like when you're not able to speak or not able to get your message across, and so the need for a communication system? We've got some quotes from some people who give us the firsthand look at what it's like. And the first thing is they get underestimated for what they're able to do. A young lady named Doreen Joseph. Speech is the most important thing that we have. It makes us a person and not a thing. No one should be a thing. You're fed potatoes all your life, but you don't like potatoes. You hate potatoes. This was Sarah Brothers. I know what it's like to be dressed in reds and blues when her favorite colors are other colors. So not having that ability to say what she wants, it can be so frustrating. So we just wanted to give you some of these quotes to, you know, put you in someone's shoes, what it's like. It's important that we keep in mind that there are no prerequisites to the use of AAC devices or systems, including behavioral. Bonnie mentioned that sometimes we find ourselves on the floor or under a desk because that's where somebody wants to be. We know that behaviors are communication. So we actually look at individuals who are showing behaviors and say, okay, they want to communicate. This person really wants to communicate. They just don't have a means beyond this behavior that's worked for them, or maybe hasn't worked so well, but it's gotten them some attention. So how can we funnel that? How can we take that energy, that desire to communicate, and then help them find another means to do that? There's also no hierarchy of devices or skills that need to be put in place before a system can be implemented or tried. We don't have to wait for a skill to develop before trying a variety of systems. Again, think of that toolbox. It's not a hierarchy of starting with no or light tech and moving on up. It's using everything. So we want to give you an example of that.
This is my daughter that I mentioned is out in the lobby or exhibit hall. Anna, here she is when she was about four, I guess. She's pressing a switch. Who has seen these kinds of switches? And sometimes they turn on a machine or like a tape recorder, or they even have a voice output that says, hey, I want to hear some music, something like that. Here she is doing that, and I could actually show you a picture of her doing that 12 years later. She was in this kind of trap of readiness. You probably heard it said a lot, well, I don't think he's ready for that. I don't think she's ready. She wouldn't be able to do that type of thing. Well, we want you to know that that is all conjecture. It is all based on nothing except our, maybe probably their appearance, right? Maybe they don't look like they'd be able to do it. So we don't present all the various options. We think they need to start with something that's very easy, and if they can't do that, keep doing it year after year after year, and maybe they'll learn it and move to the next step.
And in Anna's case, the skill that they were waiting for was her being able to point. They would present some pictures or some different things, and she could use her whole hand and hit that button, or she'd grab what you presented, but she didn't have that pointer finger. So they were waiting for that to develop. Finally, in high school, when she was given the opportunity to try some different devices, look what happened. I don't know if you can see that well enough. I have another picture.
The next one is a better one. Yeah. This, when she was finally given access to just experiment and explore with a device that was backlit, that is when we discovered, besides the fact that she could actually point if she was given a grid like this to rest her finger on, we also discovered that she couldn't see very well at all. And all the paper overlays we've been using that she seemed bored with or ignored or was just too cognitively low to do, she couldn't see them.
So while folks were starting thinking there was a hierarchy of skills, starting with the paper overlays and the paper pictures, and waiting for that point, she wasn't given these opportunities. Once she was given a device with backlighting, with a key guard, look at that finger, go right to where she wanted. None of us taught her that. We didn't teach her how to point at this time. She just finally had some motivation. She could say some things, and that grid helped her get her finger in there, and she took off.
So the point in our philosophy at CTEC is to learn while doing. Don't get ready to learn something. Start right up into it.
Also, in terms of the hierarchy, if a person already has some communication methods, don't eliminate them. Again, that total communication, we want to add to them and use all methods that someone has available.
I'll just add a note in here, too. What I do in my part of this talk is tell you what we've learned through our mistakes. And another mistake we made with our daughter was when she finally did find a device that was going to work for her, we told her, we had her stop her other methods. Yes, no. Don't do that. Say it with your device. That's not the right way to do it. Because she had it. If they a person has a way to tell you something, if it's with a word or a sign or a gesture that's working for them, don't eliminate that.
I think also in this, with various communication methods, part of the training then is to teach someone when is the best way to use each of the methods that you have. Parents especially may completely understand every nuance of a gesture and sound and word that's communicated, but someone out in the community may not understand that. So it's teaching the individual You have this toolbox. Now, when we're in the community, this is the tool you need to use. When you're at home, you can use this tool. Your parents understand that. So that comes into the training aspect. It's important to start early with AAC. It's really impossible to predict the future development of speech, communication, language in a child, so start early. So much of what AAC can bring is building language development, and that is just critical and key. There are great risks when someone is not able to communicate. We work, and we'll show you lots of pictures of individuals who are adults, many of whom were not given opportunities for communication systems beyond their gestures or beyond them being in a situation where everything was taken care of for them. And so they had some learned helplessness and just waiting and not realizing that they have some control, that they can communicate. There's a little guy we saw. Again, just because he's young, not necessarily starting with lower tech. The high-tech devices can provide so much, especially with language development and giving access to a lot of things within one piece of equipment. It's also never too late. So again, I mentioned we work with a lot of adults. The gentleman on the left side of the screen, he was participating in a session at the Supported Life Conference. I don't believe he received his device until he was in his 40s and was telling about his experience.
Yes, and this is one of our most recent clients we've been working with, who now has a device mounted on his wheelchair, which he controls with a dot on his forehead. And have people heard about this type of technology? Yes. Why don't you explain that?
It's head mouse technology. So he wears the silver dot. There's a camera on the top of his device that reads the placement of that, and as he moves his head, the cursor moves on the screen, and he can stop on the location he wants to say his message. And then after a period of time, it's accessed, and the device will speak his message. So the key in any working with AAC is really to have high expectations. That's one of our big philosophies. We expect communication. And when you go into a situation with an individual and they can sense that you are expecting, that you do believe that they'll communicate with you, they will. We've had some wonderful surprises with folks.
It may take a while because they're so used to being seen as incapable. But you have to just persist that that's your view of them. It's different.
Shall I read this?
Yeah, anything
yes.
You want to say about that?
When we cannot be sure because we have too little information, we should base our efforts on assumptions which, if wrong, will have the least dangerous effects on outcomes. Now, that's maybe a complex way to say this, and we've tried to rework it and make it similar to give person the benefit of the doubt. But it's actually a pretty serious statement, and I can I can use Anna as an example of this. We didn't know what she could do, and the professionals working with her didn't know, but they erred on the side of lower expectations. Had they erred on the side of having high expectations because they weren't sure what she could do, she might have been using her device in a much more sophisticated way by now. But she didn't actually get anything that worked for her until she was about 16 years old.
So in the assessment, choosing an AAC system for an individual, it's a process over time. And our program is based on that. We have a certain amount of hours that we work with someone, but it's over time. Sometimes our assessment process can take several months, maybe even up to 8 or 10 months, because we want to build a relationship with the individual and with those who are working with the individual. So our assessment process not only occurs at our center, but in the individual's home, in their program, or where they are in the community. It's so important. It really begins with the individual and their goals. What is it that they want to do? If the individual can't answer that question, those on their team, their family and support members can help us answer that question. It begins with where they are. Are they working or volunteering out in the community in a program? Let's go see what their daily life is all about, and that will help us match the correct device for them. What activities are they involved in? And what team members are they communicating with? Who are the people in their life? We take time to meet with these folks and to really build some trust with the individual that we're working with. It's so important. We also, of course, look at their current abilities, attention, cognitive, motor abilities, vision, and hearing. All of those things are going to help us narrow down our choice of device and what's going to be most appropriate for that person. And how are they currently communicating? It's so important to involve everyone on the team in this, family members, program support, other support staff.
One of the things we've noticed, and I'm not sure how to solve this, but when we work with a client who's an adult, maybe in his 30s or 40s, we want so much to know what has happened in his past, communication-wise. We'll find out later, maybe much later, oh, he had a such-and-such device, and he used it this way, 8 years ago. But somehow that information doesn't keep going with that person through life. So maybe now with the internet and online record keeping and all that, that could really happen well. We have a client who's quite difficult to work with autism, who gets really disruptive, has to leave, he wants to go, so he goes out. And we learned just by accident from someone who knew him way in the past that, oh, he really knows a lot about numbers. What you need to do with him is show him, number one, we're doing this, number two, this, number three. Didn't solve all his problems, but that was a huge tool benefit for us to work with him.
So by involving the whole team, hopefully we can find out
family,
those things.
Of course,
the family.
We'll have records.
Yes. Another gentleman who, again, this is an individual who had not had any sort of a communication system at all. He had been in sort of a sheltered living situation, but now is supported in his own home, and was very excited to see some communication systems. The first time I showed him, this is one of our first sessions, and I showed him on the device how he could say his feelings, say, I feel, and then have a choice. He chose bored about three times in a row, and the staff with him said, he probably is. He really hasn't had a chance to get out much or to tell us what, he would like to do. So it was very exciting. One of the things that we do within our assessment process is to follow the person's lead. And we found this acronym that we really like in a book through the Hannon Center, SLOW. So we'll go through what each of these mean. So this is a way to really help us to slow down and get to know an individual. And the first is by sharing activities. A lot of our assessment process is finding out what someone likes to do, share that activity, and introduce various devices during that activity so that it's real, it makes sense to them. We listen, we take some time. Observing is the O, and the W in SLOW is wait. Too often we jump in with our agenda, or if we think that we're waiting too long, we want to jump in with some physical support and help someone say something. So we need to slow down and we need to wait and not talk as much. So in our assessment, we use a real integrated approach rather than formal testing. Again, Bonnie mentioned we work with a lot of individuals who have multiple disabilities, who have very complex communication needs. They're not easy to test. We can't typically use a formal test. So we use this slow model of sharing activities, getting into their normal activities, their natural environment, and introducing devices there where they're already comfortable, and then seeing what they're able to do. It leads us to feature matching, because as we're sharing activities, as we're getting to know this individual, we can determine certain features that they'll require in a device based on their goals, their abilities, their environments, all those things that we're looking at and observing. So some of the features that we will determine are an access method. Can an individual directly select a location, or do they need to have a switch and have location scan, or as in the gentleman with the head mouse, now there's eye gaze access available, so if someone is only able to move their eyes, they can access a communication system. Vocabulary, really critical in a device. So how is someone going to organize and represent the vocabulary that's in the device? As we've spent time and work with them, we've been able to show them different systems, photographs versus line drawings, all those types of decisions that have to be made. And how is that going to be organized in the device? How many locations? How many pages to scroll through? That sort of thing. The display type, whether it's a static display, just the pictures, or a dynamic display, more of a computer screen with the backlighting. Some other features, what type of speech output? There's digitized speech, which is a recorded voice, versus synthesized speech, which is the more robotic, although they're getting a lot better. Size and weight of a device that's needed, and any rate enhancement, such as word prediction or icon symbol prediction. There might be other features that someone's looking for in a device too, such as MP3 player or a phone or those types of things. Now, all of this feature matching is really the same if we're looking at an iPad. I know those are very popular now. We get a lot of parents who come to us who already have purchased an iPad, and so it's looking at what app. Sometimes we backtrack a little bit to see if the iPad is even the most appropriate system. But in choosing the application, we still need to answer these same questions. It's still important to go through the assessment process and find out the features of the app and determine which one is most appropriate for an individual. So that's the assessment side of things, the process. Now we'll talk a little bit about using AAC devices and the training end of things. So training is essential. We know that.
Training on how to use the device, like with a manual, how does it work? That's only one part. Training on how to use the device for speaking and communicating is a whole separate topic and needs requires separate strategies for training. So on the make it fun part, we introduce the device and the method of access in a very fun, communicative way that empowers the person immediately. Now, one of the ways that has empowered my daughter was when she got a volunteer job in a kindergarten class where she told stories to the children, but she also got to tell them what to do. And we're finding this is a really important technique with many of the people we work with who are being told what to do constantly and how to do it and when and taught, instructed, and fixed. Give that person an opportunity to tell you what to do and watch how it increases their sense of who they are.
Motivation, I've talked with many people and even some people today of how do we get the person to initiate? You know, how do we really help this person use their device more because they don't want to use it? Well, I think we need to get a little silly. We need to have some fun. We need to show them that communicating in languages can be fun. And so we need to tap into what's motivating to an individual. So that's the have fun part. It's also important to make it real. train in the context of real situations and activities. We really have found, and I think the research shows, that drill and practice just doesn't quite work. Not the same, not to build enough. There's room for practice, maybe in some situations before you go out somewhere, but we prefer to train someone using the device where they're really going to use the device. We also really teach support staff and families, as someone's learning to use their device, respond to everything that they say so that they will get the connection that they are communicating something to you. And even if it's a mistake and they didn't mean to say it, a response is important. And then you can they can learn to repair that breakdown and find the thing that they really did want to say.
And if many people will ask us, well, I don't believe that's true. Why would you want us to do that? But the person is repeating some nonsense constantly. This is a common thing. My daughter does it. Some others do. They find something that sounds interesting, and they'll just repeat it over and over again. Awesome, 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 awesome. Well, and the staff will say to us, well, how are we supposed to respond to that the same way every time? Well, respond to it like you would to anybody else saying it over again. Say, will you stop that? I'm so tired of hearing it. What's wrong with saying that? Or awesome, or imitate them. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Just don't ignore it, because that's saying that your speaking doesn't mean a thing.
And then it may become more of a game or some sort of stimulation than really turning into communication.
Here we are with Carl at his home, keeping it real. Caesar here is a man who uses a device. We work together. We're partners in our team. His assistant, Savion, and then a staff person at the house. They're all looking at his device and helping to help create those jokes. So we did it there in this house. And also you'll see all over the artwork. One of the first things he was able to say with his things, I want a beer. And the staff was so excited they went running to the store.
Here's another gentleman we work with learning to use his device to do his banking. So again, we didn't practice this ahead of time. His staff went with him and modeled and helped show him how he can say these messages. Now talk about motivation. That's very motivational. He learned those very quickly.
And also to say something really positive about the people you encounter in the community. We have never found anybody in all our business with people that doesn't want to participate mm-hmm. and help the person communicate. Mm-hmm.
This is a gentleman. We were up shopping with a whole group, actually, and we just kind of started talking with him. He found something in his device to talk about shopping. We didn't even know where it was. I mean, I couldn't have even prompted him for it because I didn't know it was there. But it was so appropriate to the situation about shopping that Bonnie immediately gave him a dollar so he could buy something because we wanted this to, you know, work out for him so that he actually could finish his shopping experience. So he was able to buy something there and use his device. But again, we waited for him, and he rose to those high expectations and showed us something we didn't even know was in his device. So for the support team members in the training aspect of it, it's important to know when to be a communication facilitator versus a communication partner. So there are lots of situations where they may be together during the day, and they're the partner. They're helping that person learn their vocabulary. They're communicating back and forth. Once they go into the community or even maybe in a program, they shift their role a little bit and now turn to be a facilitator to help that person be in the forefront and have a conversation with someone else. So it is a role shift, and the techniques are a little bit different when you make that shift. So we work with the team members to really help them learn what's the difference and how do they behave in that difference. They may change their body position a little bit. So the hope is that they're assisting the individual use their device to have that one-on-one communication with a third party so that the person, especially in the community, someone who might not be familiar with communication devices, they won't go around the person using the device and just talk with the family member or the support person. So it's their body location, it's how they're interacting with the individual. We also use modeling as a technique to show an individual how to use their device. We've run into this a lot where individuals we're working with have never met someone else who uses a communication device. So we're giving them this new tool, and yet we're just talking with them. It's really helpful when we also use the device or have another device that we use so that they can see how this tool works and how powerful this tool can be. Bonnie was just telling me about yesterday, in fact. So
when I go out with Caesar to work with people in their homes or their community, what we're doing now, and I suggest everybody try this, is we're not talking at all. We're using an iPad, iPhone, download free software that speaks the text. You type in a sentence, it speaks. And we're using that to talk to the AAC user. It's amazing. Really surprising me how effective that is. And I don't know why. We're going to have to do some research about whether there is any research on this. But it's more equal, maybe. It's funny to them when they see how hard it is for me to find what I want to say. That's part of it. It's the same sound, kind of. It's not flapping your jaw, saying dribble. Although you have to be very careful to find what you want to say. I don't know. But it's one of our best strategies.
It's probably causing you to slow down, too.
Yeah.
Because I think we go so fast, we talk so fast, we keep repeating if the person doesn't answer right away. And so maybe it just, as you said, kind of an equalizer. We also use prompting to help an individual learn to use their device. So the difference between modeling and prompting is we're providing some cues because we want the individual to then make that selection. We are pointing to the device or making a verbal cue that they could say something, and we want them to follow through and hit that. Modeling is not expecting the individual to say it, but we're using their device or another device to show how this vocabulary works, how this device works. So it's a little bit different in the expectation of the individual and how you're using that. For prompting, we want to go from the least amount of prompting to the most. So that if I've asked a question or someone else has asked a question, I want to prompt and help that person answer. If there's silence, they don't say anything, I don't want to jump right into hand over hand and giving them that physical support. I want to start with a natural cue, just asking the question. If there's still no response, then I can move up the hierarchy of my prompt and maybe do a little pointing prompt. Or maybe give a verbal cue and a pointing prompt. Shine a flashlight on the location that I want them to hit. So it's working your way up from the least amount of prompting up to the most. Finally, at the end, if they need some physical support, that should be the last resort in prompting. So here's the gentleman who was at the bank. He's now at McDonald's, also another very motivating community activity. And his support staff in the flowered shirt there is prompting to help him learn. So we didn't, again, practice this ahead of time. They went to McDonald's. He's doing the prompting right there. You get immediate feedback, which is great, and that's how someone's going to learn to use their device. We prompt, where is that hamburger? He's going to get his hamburger. He's going to know where that is next time.
And also notice the difference. At this point, the staff member, Keith, he's the facilitator, right? He's trying to be out of the picture as much as possible,
right,
and supporting the interaction between the two people. Whereas if he and Keith are sitting at a table eating, he's the partner where they're going to talk together.
This is an example of modeling. I actually had my son with me that day, and we had our device. We were finding some things to say. And Megan on the other side was using her device. So we were trying not to talk, and my son was my little assistant that day. We were modeling.
This is another technique which is very effective, and that is to have the learner, who is in the middle here, Janae, teach someone else. You know, the saying, the best way to learn something is to teach it to someone else. So she is showing her mother how to use the device she was trying. And here she is, a year later, having gotten the device, she is at her Easter Seals program showing the staff there how it works. So it's still an effective tool for her to be a teacher.
So for more information, we just want to let you know that at CTEC we do offer monthly activities and trainings. You can check our website for schedules. But some of the activities that we offer, one are called Texplorations, and they're just a chance for anyone in the community, family members, teachers, support staff, programs, to come in and just learn about what AAC is. Get some hands-on, try some different devices, ask questions, open to anyone. We try out some things, show some of the devices that we have. And then Bonnie mentioned our AAC user groups. There's one that's held the second Tuesday of every month. There's one that is held the third Friday of every month. And these are really powerful groups. The wonderful thing is we have some mentors on staff at CTEC, and they plan and run these users groups. So, and we're working to build that mentor program so that we can have more individuals like Caesar be a part of our assessments, our training, and also mentoring with individuals who, when they get their devices. We're really trying now with the users groups to, it's a nice way to for the support staff to get some additional training, but we're really trying to build the communication skills peer-to-peer. So get some little communication, which will usually break up the group into little two- or three-person groups so that they can practice. What is a conversation? How do we take turns? Sometimes we'll send out a script ahead of time just to give people an idea, make sure they have some things programmed in their devices ahead if they need to. And then we try and practice those skills. So we found that in our training, the individual might learn the mechanics of the device. The staff may know how everything's working. We've got vocabulary going. But now there's that training component of teaching the individual, what's a conversation look like? How do I ask questions? Learning more of the vocabulary and more of the turn-taking and just nuances of a conversation. So that's one of our goals for the users group, but also something that we focus on in our individual training as well.
And I like to add that I think this was one of the biggest surprises for me, and we've been doing this, for quite a while now, is how competent a person can be on the device does not give an indication to you of how well they can hold a conversation. We've had people, and Caesar's been very surprised too, because he'll go in with me and he'll say something about greeting to someone who's very able to use the device, and the person does not appear to get it, that there is a back and forth thing happening here. So a conversation, the art of conversation, is not something that some of these folks have picked up along the way, and you can have fun imagining why. One thing might be, they've never been part of any conversation. No one's expected them to be, so they're very good at listening. They probably know a whole lot from being so receptive all these years, but not an active participant. So we're having to actually teach turn-taking in a conversation.
I think part of that, too, is also the vocabulary that's available in a device. Too often, individuals get a device, and the only things that are programmed in are, I want.
Yeah.
I want to eat. I want something to drink. I want to go to the bathroom. And you get the thing you say I want, and the conversation's over. They haven't even been given the vocabulary to practice those skills. So that's a whole another key component in training, but also that important part in the assessment process, so that they have a device that will allow for a lot of vocabulary to be programmed in to give them that opportunity to learn those skills. Some of the trainings that we offer, we have a support strategies class. It's geared for family members and support teams, teachers. It covers quite a bit of the information that we covered this afternoon in terms of training. So it's all about how you can provide support to the individual using the device, strategies that you can use to help them use their device more and in the context of all their normal activities. So that's one of the classes that we have. We have manufacturer representatives from the different AAC companies come to CTEC, and they'll provide their own trainings. It might be a one-day training. One of the manufacturers comes and just uses our space, and she sets up appointments, half-an-hour appointments with people to come and have individual time with her. So those are available on an ongoing basis. We have an overview of apps for iPad and iPod to learn about what the variety of apps are that are available and see some of the features of those. And we also have a training on vocabulary selection. And, you know, once you get a device or you're setting up a system, how to really make sure that the vocabulary available is going to allow for full communication, for language development.
And we also will do a custom training, too. If we get a call that a group or an individual really needs to learn more about some aspect of support for AAC, we will create something and offer that and offer it to a larger audience. So if you have any kind of ideas about what you'd like, don't hesitate to call us and see what we can come up with.
We did give you some website resources to find out more about apps for communication. That's a really growing question that we get a lot. So these are some of the websites that we use just to see updates and information about a variety of apps. These are just some additional website resources for AAC in general, some that we found very helpful. The fourth one down, exchange at atnet.org. There's a system throughout California, the AT Network, and they have the AT Exchange, where you can borrow assistive technology, including AAC devices. There are several centers throughout California that will loan them out. So if you go on this website, you can search for specific items. You can log on and get a little account and then be able to communicate with the center that has those items and work out a loan. The loan is free. The only thing you have to pay for typically is the shipping back. And you can keep the items usually 2 weeks, sometimes a month. So it's a nice way to try some things out if you don't have the technology. The WADI, the one just below that, is the Wisconsin Assistive Technology Initiative. They have some wonderful free resources, some really nice forms, just a lot of things, but there's a whole section on AAC that gives you some nice resources for assessment. Oh, and the one below that, AAC Tech Connect, also some good free resources.
So we would like to thank the California Communications Access Foundation for supporting our participation to do this session and to have our table at the Mind Institute conference through a grant to us. But we'd also like to mention to you that the Mind Institute itself and the SED, Center for Excellence on Developmental Disabilities at the Mind Institute, gave us startup funding for our program with CTEC. So we're forever grateful for that, because we were struggling after planning it for about 8 years how to really get it going. So that was what year? 2008?
Nine.
Yeah, so it's fairly new. So this is our contact information. Again, this is where you should go to find out all you want to know about what we're offering this month and on down the line.
And we do have a monthly email newsletter that comes out, so if you'd like to be on that mailing list, let us know. You can sign up at our email address there at the bottom.
The UC Davis Mind Institute was created in 1998 with a promise to find cures for neurodevelopmental disorders. Every day, our physicians and researchers come closer to fulfilling that promise. Their groundbreaking research on autism, Fragile X syndrome, chromosome 22q11.2 deletion syndrome, ADHD, and other brain disorders are helping children achieve their fullest potential. Please visit our website to find out more about current studies, upcoming events, and how you can help make a difference.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.